Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Super Soul of all living entities, and who vanquishes all the fear of His devotees, entered the mind of Vasudeva in full opulence. Purport. The word Vishvatman refers to one who is situated in everyone's heart. Ishvar sarvabhutanam riddeshe jirnitishtati. Another meaning of Vishvatma is the only lovable object for everyone. Because of forgetfulness of this object, people are suffering in this material world. But if one fortunately revives his old consciousness of loving Krishna and connects with Vishvatma, one becomes perfect. The Lord is described in the third canto, 3:2:15, as follows. Pararvaisheso maha amsa yukto yapjo pijato bhagavan. Although unborn, the Lord, the master of everything, appears like a born child by entering the mind of a devotee. The Lord is always there within the mind, and consequently it is not astonishing for him to appear as if born from a devotee's body. The word avivesha signifies that the Lord appeared within the mind of Vasudeva. There was no need for discharge of semen. That is the opinion of Sridhar Swami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In the Vaishnava Toshini, Srila Sanatana Goswami says that consciousness was awakened within the mind of Vasudeva. Srila Veera Raghava Acharya, who also says that Vasudeva was one of the demigods and that within his mind the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as an awakening of consciousness. Om Agyan Timidandasya Ginajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swampadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaudavaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, prayers by the demigods. And this is the appearance of the Lord. The Lord's appearance, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattva taktva deham purna janma Naitimam eti sorjunan. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world no longer has to take birth in this material world, but attains to the spiritual abode. So, it's a very great mystery. It's a very deep and very great mystery, the appearance of the Lord. Because it appears that He has a mother and a father, and that's how all of us appear. Without a mother and a father, we just don't manifest. We have to come by way of the arrangement of the material nature. But Krishna seems to go along with the laws of the material nature. Why does He do that? He could just appear in any of His forms and just perform His activities. Why does He go through all this? Because there's many reasons. One, He wants to give two great living entities a chance to play that role as mother and father, because that is their desire, to love Him and to serve Him in that mood. So in order to fulfill that desire, He appears to satisfy His devotees. But there's another reason, which is interesting, and that is you can't know Krishna simply by seeing Him perform something extraordinary. He doesn't want to be, when we say, cheapened by His, you know, by doing all kinds of magic tricks or somehow that are doing things that are very way beyond the laws of material energy. In other words, he keeps the ordinary consciousness intact. If you want to know him, you have to know him by bhakti. There's no other way. He cannot all of a sudden, you cannot all of a sudden, oh, he's doing all these extraordinary things, and therefore he's God and I can serve him. No, you have to know, follow the process and develop love for Krishna. Then you can understand why he does what he does and even how he does it. He reveals that, just like his disappearance is even more mysterious than his appearance. He was apparently shot in the foot by a hunter, and he died. Now, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, in his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, mentions this particular incident and gives a 20-page purport on it. And what is he speaking about? How that, you know, the non-devotees, they'll find fault with that particular, and they'll say that's not God, or they'll say that God actually died. He was, therefore, if he died, how could he be God? Therefore, Krishna is not actually God. But Prabhupada, and also, it's mentioned by the acharyas, nobody dies by getting shot in the foot with an arrow. you might get wounded, but you don't die. That's the general thing. But Krishna performs these, of course, there was many reasons behind why that happened in that way. And there's a long story that the... I'm talking about his disappearance, and here we got the appearance anyway. We'll get back to the appearance, because it's interesting, his disappearance. The young children of the Yadav dynasty wanted to make fun of some of the sages. So they dressed one of the boys, Samba, as a lady, and they put a big belly on her. Him. It wasn't a her. It was a him. And then they paraded in front of the sages, and they were taunting the sages and said, is it going to be a boy or a girl? So the sages didn't really appreciate the kids mocking them in that way. And so they pronounced a curse that the... it was actually an iron lump that they put in. It was a piece of an iron ball. And they said that actually... because of this, the whole Yadav dynasty will be destroyed by a fratricidal war. And so, what happened was, when they heard that, they all became quite sober. And they took that iron lump that they used to make fun of the sages, and they ground it up into pieces and they threw it into the ocean. They said that iron lump would be the cause of the destruction. And later on, what happened was that those iron filings were washed ashore, and then they grew into steel rods of bamboo, and those rods were used by the Yadus to fight amongst each other, and then they killed each other. And that's how the Yadav dynasty disappeared. But it was the other part was one of the pieces that was ground up remained in a larger piece. And one day this hunter, he was fishing in the river, and he found one of these pieces, and he took that piece and he made it the tip of his arrow and sharpened it, and that was the same piece that was used, that was the same arrow that was used to shoot Krishna in the foot by Krishna's arrangement. So all these things apparently look like, you know, ordinary things or a little extraordinary. But that's just to keep the non-devotees non-devotees. It says when Krishna was actually here, only 200 the most, in fact the actual statement is between 100 and 200 people actually knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And millions of people came in contact with Krishna. Millions. And they were face to face with him, but didn't understand his position as the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada mentions, maybe, he said, between 100 and 200 at most. So, therefore, they didn't have the bhakti. The Pandavas did, and they knew it, because they had the bhakti. So you can see Krishna face to face, but if you don't have bhakti, you can't go any farther than that. And Krishna only reveals himself by bhakti. So here, if we can understand a little bit about his appearance, it says that if you could understand fully, then immediately you are eligible for the spiritual world. But if we can understand a little bit how he appears in the mind of his devotee. And Prabhupada said he's already in the mind of his devotee. But by the pure consciousness of the devotee, by devotional service to the Lord enters into that mind and then he becomes prominent. So Krishna is pure consciousness. And therefore, when the devotee has pure consciousness, that's called Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Krishna's there. So in this case, Krishna personally entered the mind of the pure-hearted Vasudeva. And then, of course, it says that he eventually appeared in the womb of his wife, Devaki, like that. Of course, he appeared in two places. He appeared in Vrindavan, in the womb of Mother Jasoda, and Nanda Maharaj is the father. So in both cases, Krishna appeared twice, simultaneously in two different places, in practically the same, what we say, transcendental way. And we might use the analogy that we use the word appearance, but Krishna doesn't appear because he's always there. If something is always there, but you can't see it, and when you see it, you say it appears. And when you don't see it, you say it disappears, right? But it's always there. Now, what's an example? The sun. Can we see the sun now? Even if you go outside, can you see the sun? It's there. But it's hidden. But it's not like it's not there. It's just covered by a layer of clouds like that. And even when the sun disappears on a clear sky and goes into what is called sunset, it doesn't disappear. It just removes itself from the sight of those within the purview of that arrangement and appears into the sight of someone else. So the appearance and disappearance of the sun is no such thing. The rising of the setting of the sun never rises and the sun never sets. Because it's always from someplace in its orbit. And from an angle of vision, it rises and sets, but it's always in some place. So in the same way, Krishna is always there, but when he wants to make a special arrangement, he appears within the heart and mind of his devotee, and that devotee becomes the instrument for bringing Krishna into the world. Apparently, Krishna doesn't need an instrument. He is completely what we say swarat. Swarat means he's independent. He's never dependent. But the thing about Krishna is he places himself in a position of dependence. Why? Just to allow his devotees to serve him. Just to allow his devotees to offer loving service in such a way that they want to protect Krishna. They want to serve Krishna because he's needy, he's hungry. Therefore, you have to feed him. He gets up in the morning, he needs a bath. Therefore, is he ever dirty? No. Does he ever need clothes? No. Does he ever need food? No. What he wants is love. And therefore, all the services that we do in Krishna as a dependent position is simply for his devotee to show loving love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So So that's Krishna's mercy upon his devotee. But the non-devotees, they can't see that. Or even those who have very little bhakti will never be able to understand how Krishna is always transcendental, always self-sufficient, always performing his pastimes, and at the same time dependent on his devotee. Everything about spiritual life is completely contradictory. Practically everything. That's why when you would try to explain transcendence, you can only go so far. You can do it up to a certain point, but ultimately transcendence is realized through Shastra and through application of Shastra, realization of Shastra through the process of pure bhakti. And then everything becomes understandable. Or Krishna reveals himself like that. How was Balaram? Balaram was transferred. We just heard that from the previous verses, from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Mohini, by the power of Krishna using his energy yoga maya, simply to facilitate Balaram's appearing in Vrindavan and not within the jail cell. Could Kamsa kill Balaram? No. But it appears that, you know, at the same time, Balaram was being protected. When Putana came to kill little Krishna, practically that was one of the first demons, you know, she was thinking, oh, this little baby, you know, she had killed so many babies before, you know, for her it was nothing. But this little baby was not just a baby. And this baby had such power that, you know, she was immediately destroyed. So in any one of Krishna's forms, or any of his incarnations, are completely transcendental to the effects of the material energy. But acting within the material energy, they take on some of the characteristics of the ordinary conditioned soul in order to facilitate transcendental pastimes. In other words, they bring Vrindavan to this material world as Goloka, the Gokul Vrindavan, in order to facilitate the loving relationships with the devotees on this planet and establish Krishna's pastimes here and establish the holy places of pastimes for the Lord, like that. So the Lord is always transcendental and he's always available. If he wants to appear someplace, he doesn't have to get on Garuda and ride a long way to get there. Or just chant some mantras and then fly through the sky and somehow land wherever he wants to land. I just thought of a bit pastime. Whereas this is about Prabhupada. Prabhupada came into an airport in Dallas, Texas, and he was greeted by reporters, and there was one woman reporter there. And she started asking questions, and somehow the subject got on to flying. And so Prabhupada said, there's actually three ways to fly. Yantra, mantra, and pigeon. I was just listening yesterday. Prabhupada was talking how the Germans went to Benares and bought three books from the Benares University, and one of was how to learn how to use mantras and yantras for making machines. And one of the books was how you can learn to fly on the back of pigeons. Yeah, it's actually a science. You can train pigeons to carry you wherever you want to go. It's called Kopata. You can read it in the fourth or fifth canto. Prabhupada talks about this. So Prabhupada was talking to this reporter, explaining to her that we can fly on yantra, tantra, in other words, yantra, mantra, and pigeon. So yogis, they fly by mantra, right? They can chant a mantra and they can fly. And yantra is a machine. And pigeon is pigeon. So So the reporter said, yes, okay, but why did you choose TWA Airlines? She said it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, to become one with you. In other words, he could have flew in on mantra, but he didn't. And she responded, she turned around and looked at her colleagues and she said, I like this man. She had a big smile. She responded really positively to Prabhupada's response. So that was Prabhupada. Yeah. Prabhupada could have did that. He could have flew in. But Prabhupada didn't want to attract people by mystic power to him. He wanted to attract people by knowledge and by devotional understanding. There was one yogi who met Prabhupada and became friends with Prabhupada, and he was a mystic healer. And he said to Prabhupada, let's make a team. Me and you go, we'll travel everywhere. You preach Krishna consciousness and I'll heal their bodies. You know, because you heal people and then you get, they're very, very open to whatever you have to say. You know, Prabhupada said no. He rejected that. He didn't want that kind of, what we say, cheap way of presenting his knowledge or philosophy. He wanted to do that. We learn the science according to Shastra, practice it, and then develop it properly. Allen Ginsberg said to Prabhupada, you can, when you smoke marijuana, you can have a nice religious experience. Prabhupada said, that may be true, but it's artificial. Prabhupada didn't disagree in total, but he said, you become dependent on the drug, and therefore it is artificial. Although you may have a religious experience because of the inducement of mind-expanding drugs can also create this kind of religious experience. But it's artificial because the drug becomes the catalyst and not your natural bhakti. So Prabhupada didn't want any form of cheating. But Prabhupada had mystic power. And he used it sometimes. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki Jai. Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. If those of you have read Jamuna Devi's biography written by Dina Tarine, wonderful. In that one story, there's one particular pastime where Jamuna is with Prabhupada, and it's a morning walk, but it's just the two of them. They're walking together in Tittenhurst here in London, John Lennon's estate. And Gurudas, he's filming them, because you can see it, there's pictures of it. So it's just the two of them that are walking, and Prabhupada's talking to Jamuna. So at one point, Prabhupada kept stopping and told Jamuna, take the rocks out of my shoes. And so she would take his shoes off and take the rocks out, and then she'd put it back on his feet, and then he would walk some more. And then he asked her, and then it kept happening. Finally, he said to her, how come these rocks keep getting in my shoes? Prabhupada, these rocks really want the dust of your lotus feet? And so later on, as the walk was going on, she was thinking, I'm going to get that dust in some way also. So she was thinking, I'm going to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. Wherever he walks, I'm going to walk on the same imprint. So she was following. And it was a little damp, so there was easily recognizable footprints. So Prabhupada's walking, she's walking behind him at this point now. So at one point she looks down and she can't see his footprints. And she continues to walk and she's noticing her own footprints, but Prabhupada's, there's no footprints for Prabhupada. So she just has to ask. So at one point she says to Prabhupada, I'm trying to walk in your footprints, but I don't see any. Prabhupada said, that will be revealed in time. And then he left and he kept walking. He didn't answer. He didn't respond beyond that. So, so even great souls, they have mystic power and they can do things. Prabhupada never tried to do mystic power. It just came with him. And there was many extraordinary things that came with Prabhupada when he was here. So for Krishna to appear, anywhere, it's just like he's Yogeshwara. He's the master of all mystics. So when we chant the holy names of Krishna, Prabhupada said, you should know that Krishna is dancing on your tongue. Now, he's not going to get contaminated by your tongue. You might think that's not so nice to have Krishna on my tongue. Because, it's not a nice place to have anybody, except food. But Krishna's transcendental. At the same time, he's not affected by wherever he is. But at the same time, he's appearing there. So he's personally appearing in the sound of his holy name, and he's non-different than his transcendental form, his qualities, and his pastimes. So that same deity we see on the altars, Radha Gokulananda, appears in the minds, in the hearts, tongue of his devotee as they perform their devotional service. No, it's non-different like that. How much we can perceive it depends on the level of our own bhakti like that. And the level of our own expression of bhakti during the worship. But Krishna can appear from anywhere. Like that. It says that if you want to call Krishna, as soon as you call him, he's there. If he wants, he's everywhere right now. Everywhere. So if he wants to appear, he can appear in his personal form in any place, at any time, according to his own will. And he doesn't have to come from a distance. He's already there. So sometimes there's certain philosophers who said, well, Krishna is everywhere. He's also on the floor. That means we're walking on him. What do? We have to walk on Krishna. That's terrible. It's a problem. But actually, Krishna says, Maya. What is that verse? Maya tatam idam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nateshu vavavastita. By me and my unmanifested form. What is that verse? 9:4 in the Bhagavad Gita. Does anybody have 9:4? I want to get the exact translation. This is one of the most mysterious verses in the Bhagavad Gita. People read this and can't understand it, even devotees. And you can only understand it. Even if you read the purport, it appears to still leave some doubt. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So he's both everywhere and not everywhere simultaneously. Does that make sense? Well, he's everywhere by his all-pervading manifestation of the energy of the Lord, but he is localized in the hearts of his devotees and in the spiritual world as Bhagavan and Paramatma, like that. And Prabhupada also said this verse is for the Mayavadis who think that everyone is God. And everything is ultimately God. So therefore Krishna says, no, I'm not everywhere. Just to bewilder the Mayavadis. Although he is everywhere, he's also doing that to stump these persons who want to claim that everything is God. What do they call that? Everything is God. What is that? There's a type of pantheism. Right, yeah, pantheism. Prabhupada said we are slightly pantheistic. He mentions that in the second canto of Bhagavatam, that yes, we say everything is God, but at the same time, everything is not God, simultaneously. Because everything is God, what do? You can't even move. But everything is not God simultaneously in the sense that the energy is different than the source, but at the same time, the energy is not different than the source. So the word is achintya. Achintya means inconceivable. So everything is both God and not God simultaneously. Therefore, the nature of the Absolute Truth is achintya. And Jiva Goswami says that without that principle of achintya, there's no question of the Absolute Truth. We have to accept that there are certain inconceivable aspects of the Absolute Truth that make the Absolute Truth what it is. If it's not inconceivable, if it's on this level of relegation to our own senses and mind or even intelligence, then what is the question of transcendence or greatness? So that's Krishna. So Krishna appears in the hearts and minds of his devotees, and then he personally appears in his transcendental form as Krishna to perform his pastimes for the pleasure of his devotees and to reestablish religious principles. So this particular chapter is very wonderful. Prabhupada liked these first three chapters of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam very much. There's a story when it was Janmashtami, was in New Vrindavan, 1972, when Prabhupada came with all his devotees. The devotees came around the world. Now, New Vrindavan, the temple room is about half the size of this one. Half the size. And so this was a Janmashtami festival. So Prabhupada's in the temple room, and it's approaching midnight. Devotees have been working all day preparing for the Janmashtami midnight ceremony, and there's aartis going on, offerings, and so many other things. And there was so many sannyasis, and they were all sitting in a row with their dandas. And Prabhupada was sitting on his vyasasan, so there was like a space. Prabhupada always wanted a space between himself and the deities so he could see the deities. No one was ever allowed in that space unless you crossed that. We could never stand in that space because Prabhupada wanted to see the deities. So the devotees were sitting in lines and all around, and some were outside in the window. And this was Janmashtami. This is in the middle of the summer, and it's hot. So Prabhupada wanted to hear Krishna's appearance. So he had the devotees reading from the scripture the appearance. And so they read the whole first chapter. And then at the end they finished the first chapter, and thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first chapter of the 10th canto, the advent of Lord Krishna. Jai Prabhupada. It was about midnight that time. And Prabhupada said, chapter 2. Now, you know, this chapter has 70-some verses. No, not that many. Yeah. It's long. It appears, but it's a very long chapter. Yeah, it's got 42 verses. Anyway, Prabhupada wanted to hear the second chapter. Okay. So now, you know, the dandas are going like this, you know, because everybody is going to try to stay awake. Everyone's fasting all day. It's hot. Everyone's tired. And so Prabhupada said, chapter 2. And Prabhupada's just sitting there, and the devotees are trying to read. They're giving it to the ones that are most awake to read. And Prabhupada's listening, and he's smiling and just reacting to hearing the pastimes of Krishna as described in the Bhagavatam. And the devotees are there, and they're struggling to stay awake. And some of them are somehow managing, others are not. And then, thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second chapter, prayers in the womb by the demigods. Jai Prabhupada, chapter 3. the appearance of Lord Krishna, the birth of Lord Krishna. So that whole chat, and at this time it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's going on. And Prabhupada, he's just so bright and he's smiling. He's been fasting all day. He just wants to hear Krishna's leelas, and the devotees are, now the dandas are really falling over, and it's like hitting, he's hitting the other guys on the other side with their clunk, you know. It was real. There's actually a little film of that you can see. I think they filmed it. And so after the third chapter, birth of Lord Krishna, Jai Prabhupada. It wasn't Jai anymore. It was like Jai. The Jai's kind of like lost their force. So Prabhupada's still bright, everybody. And then Prabhupada, they were thinking, I hope he doesn't ask for the fourth chapter. And Prabhupada looked around. It was really way after midnight. He said, I think you're all hungry and tired. So let us take some prasadam. Jai. Prabhupada just wanted to hear this pastime of Krishna's appearance. I mean, he's the one that actually put it there and wrote the purports. Of course, that came later, 1972. Those purports weren't there, but they were reading from a text. It wasn't the actual, written Bhagavatam, because Prabhupada hadn't got that far by 1972. They were just reading the translations, and so Prabhupada was really, really enjoying it. So that sometimes there's a little austerity in getting the nectar. Okay, so any questions, comments, Krishna's appearance, mysterious,